podcast and yay, coffee. So we're having coffee.
Two types of coffee, cold and hot.
Yes,
cold and hot today. Yay.
Thank you.
But okay, so everyone, we are at Jack's Diner in Napa. They're not a coffee roaster, but they do serve OHM coffee roasters, correct? And I have Derek Bromley, who is the founder, owner of OHM. And let's talk about OHM. What is OHM?
Absolutely. Well, OHM Coffee Roasters actually just turned a year old yesterday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Oh, just celebrated our one-year anniversary here in Napa.
Whoa.
I came out of the wine business, so I'm sort of a lifelong food and wine guy.
Okay.
Went to the hotel school at Cornell's, where I had training in restaurants, was a sommelier, and spent a lot of time in the wine business.
Here
in Napa, over in Sonoma as well.
Right.
I was on the commercial side.
Right.
Geeked out a lot about just wine, food, flavor profiles.
Sorry, you guys, this is delicious hot coffee.
The more I got into that, the more I was getting into the coffee on the side. It's a sort of a side love.
Side love. And did you always just like coffee and then you're all, oh, let me experiment?
And yeah. You know, it's funny. See. My it's not so much the norm today, but I think my mom gave me my first cup of coffee at, I don't know, 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was sort of this, like, tea time kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was about... Yeah, an inch of coffee and 6 inches of milk and sugar and everything else.
Kind of like France with their wine.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah, both my mom and dad were coffee aficionados from a pretty early age. So I always had a taste for it.
Yeah, that's how my parents are too. They always drink coffee. I mean, Folgers, whatever. But I was like, oh, I want coffee. And they would used to say, no, it's going to stump your growth. And I'm Filipino, so they're like, it's going to stump your growth. I'm like, I'm already going to be short, so it won't matter. But they really did stop me from drinking coffee until I was 16 or 17. Like, they wouldn't ever serve it. But I love coffee ice cream, coffee anything. And in college, I just went full on coffee, because that's how you have to survive in college if you don't drink. Stuff.
You got to be able to stay awake for all those papers and exams to study for.
Yeah. So did you grow up in the county, Napa, Sonoma, or did you grow up somewhere else?
Actually, I grew up on the East Coast, just outside of Philadelphia.
Okay.
By way of New York for a number of years.
Right.
And moved out here in 2001.
And did you know Jen before or after? And Jen's his wife.
My lovely wife, Jen, yes. We met down, well, I was living in San Francisco at the time.
Okay.
She was living in Nashville, was contemplating a move out west.
Okay.
So we sort of met through that process and started a relationship long distance for 6 or 8 months.
Uh-huh.
And then I flew out there New Year's Eve of 2005 for a road trip here.
Right.
So we packed up a U-Haul and drove out together.
Oh, you guys are exciting people. Such adventures. Okay, so made it to the city, not San Francisco. You were still doing wine, psalm stuff?
So I moved out here originally. Domaine Chandon moved me out to launch their still wine program as a brand manager.
Okay.
I've been a sommelier. I started my own company prior to that during the...
You a certified sommelier?
You know, back in those days, this was like the mid-late 90s, it wasn't as important to have the certifications to sort of have a decent career as a somm.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think that's a lot different. Many people are going into the court, they're getting their, you know, their basic, their advanced, going for the master, which is a massive undertaking.
Have you seen that movie?
Sure have, yes.
Is it just like that?
It's pretty intense.
It seems so intense.
It's sort of the pinnacle of commitment, right? You have to have talent, you have to have the work ethic and everything else, and you have to be born with the biology, you know, the taste buds that can actually help you taste the nuances of what's going on.
But I just know when it tastes good to me, but I couldn't tell you. I'm like, huh? Sure, Barry. Tell me what it is. I'll think of it. Okay, so you were there, and then you started when did you start experimenting with coffee?
Well, you know, I guess the seeds were planted, you know, back in age 4 or 5.
Right.
I had a school bus stop. I think that was elementary school, middle school. The bus would come right by the neighborhood deli. And I guess I used to go in and order a coffee. And it wasn't until a few years later the owners told my parents that they were, you know, watering it down in the back.
Yeah.
Just giving me a little taste of coffee.
That's hilarity.
But so it was always sort of there as a common theme. And at the Hotel School of Cornell, we've learned about all sorts, all things, you know, food and wine and service. I did have a guest lecture by Dr. Ely of Ely Espresso sometime back there.
Cool.
That was the first time I really got to see someone totally geeked out about coffee. And,
yeah.
You know, do it, showing these charts and graphs of like, espresso extraction and times and what compounds come out or what part of the extraction cycle.
That's exciting. Maybe I should, like, email Copia and say, bring someone. I would totally geek out on it.
Yeah.
Are you going to go to the coffee festival in November in the city?
I don't have it on my calendar just yet, but in the startup world, November is, that's a long way away.
I
need to look into that.
I only know because it keeps popping up, and I don't know if it's because of my Facebook page that keeps popping up, but I'm like, oh, I think I will go.
Well, Facebook probably has you marked as a coffee lover at this
point. I know. They do. I try to hide it, but whatever. Everyone knows. Okay. So you geeked out a little bit.
Geeked out a little bit and continued. And it wasn't actually, if there was another moment of my coffee life evolution, it was probably sometime around 2004 when I had my first blue bottle cappuccino. And that was like the light bulb going off for me where it was like, wait a minute, this beverage can be something like the wine beverage that I've been working my entire career in thus far.
Yeah.
You know, where you've got multiple $100 bottles of wine.
Right.
There's actually, coffee could start to achieve some of those much more elegant and nuanced expressions. Before then, it was sort of like Starbucks was, you know, such a better cup of coffee than so much of what else was out there.
Right.
But Blue Bottle just sort of turned my whole paradigm on its head. It's like, whoa, this is something else entirely.
And did you, so that was around 2004.
Mm-hmm. And they were kind of just getting started then.
Right.
They were pretty underground. I went to their kiosk in Hayes Valley.
Yeah.
I had to wait in the line of 10 or 20 people deep. It was all word of mouth at that point.
And was Phil's open by then? Have you had Phil's?
Phil's was around there as well, yes.
I was just reading about him. I'm like, oh, I need to go. I've seen it. It's never been convenient for me to go in. I'm like, I'm going to try him. Because I loved his story. I'm like, oh. He's fun. Maybe I'll have to get him one day just to chit-chat. He's still alive, right? He's still alive.
I hope so.
He's like a grandpa or something now. But
so Blue Bottle was one of those early guys in what they call the third wave coffee movement, which was the way I describe it in just in basic terms, it's sort of the backlash to the heavy, dark roasted movement of the Starbucks and the Peets that you know, put high-end coffee on the map to begin with. Trained consumers that it's okay to spend $3 on a cup of coffee, not a dollar on a cup of coffee.
Right.
They sort of paved the way for that next generation to come in. But a lot of those guys were, to some extent, their roast style is a little bit of a backlash to that very dark, heavy-handed roasting.
Yeah, I find the Starbucks now to be really bitter, right?
Yep.
And then it makes me sad. No offense to Starbucks, but it really makes me sad when I'm driving around town and they're carrying their sugar-filled drinks, and I'm sitting there going, you just passed Molinari, you just passed Napa Valley Roasty, you just passed, like...
And they're having their coffee-flavored
ritual
milkshakes, right?
Is just, like, literally 2 blocks away, I can't believe, because that's not a convenient location either, you know?
Yeah, parking in this area, downtown Napa, is tough.
So...
Especially for a convenience item like coffee, where you sort of want to get in and get it out quickly.
Right. I'm going, anyway, that's my little rant for today. I'm like, I think I was just more annoyed because I saw like 3 people when I was at a stop sign. I'm like, please support local.
Yep.
So well, 2004.
That was 2004, yeah. And that just started the timer going for me, I guess. As I was progressing in my career, I was taking on more and more responsibility in sales and marketing roles in wine, but also seeing more and more parallels between how wine as a category is marketed and how new products are innovated and what was happening or not yet happening in coffee.
Right.
Bought my first home espresso machine in 2007. It was a wedding present to ourselves for Jen and me.
And did you know how to do your like press your own and everything, all right? Did you take classes? Oh, yes.
A little bit from my restaurant training.
That's
It was mostly self-taught and watching, you know, the Blue Model and other baristas doing their latte art.
Yeah.
Then there's a guy by the name of David Schomer up in Portland who was one of the early guys for espresso. So I read his book and DVD at the time. Now all the stuff's on YouTube or elsewhere.
You are a coffee geek. I love it. I don't think I'm that geeky yet, but I can be.
That was probably another moment for me. I was thinking at one point, you know, if I ever had to give up coffee or wine, at the time I was in the wine business, which one would it be? And it took me a minute. And I think ultimately I came up with I'd rather give up wine than not have my little amplification in the morning.
That's true, yeah. It's easy for me to give up wine, I think. Because I think wine is more like a treat for me. It's not something like I need all the time. But this morning I was driving like, I need coffee. Like, can I hold out? What am I going to do? All right, so you got your first coffee.
First espresso machine in 07. I think I paid it off within the first year or so.
Yeah.
Given the amount
so
I
like
saved
a major
on.
Espresso machine.
But it was a high-end home, you know, between the grinder and the espresso, $1,500, $2,000, something like that. So not a small investment for a home setup. But I was buying a couple of cappuccinos a day.
Yeah.
At the time, I sort of had some stomach issues, so I wasn't drinking drip coffee.
Right.
Could only do an espresso shot or two, so sort of had to go with the espresso route. But, you know, the amount that I saved from those two cappuccinos a day times a year, I'd more than paid off the machine.
So when did you say, I'm going to switch over or I'm going to start thinking about this business plan? And how did you get Ohm as the name?
Either the yoga Ohm or the amplified Ohm.
Yeah. Amplified Ohm. Oh, yes. Oh, my husband's a musician. I should know that.
Oh, great.
And And now it makes sense with your amplified. I'm a little slow sometimes, but...
Well, I didn't want to make it too obvious either.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be sort of a caricature, you know,
Type
brand. But for me, it was, you know, as I progressed in my career, most recently in the wine business, I was the chief marketing officer of the Hess Collection. So I was running all of their direct-to-consumer business, doing all the packaging and branding across, what was that, 8 different wine brands. And sort of looking at my career path and saying, okay, next step would be maybe a general manager at a winery or, you know, further marketing positions in ever bigger companies.
Right.
And to some degree, it was sort of like I'm doing a lot of work for other people. There's no, you can make little step changes with your salary or your compensation, but you're never really working for yourself.
Right.
Writing your own destiny.
Right.
But to start your own business in the wine industry at this point is pretty daunting.
Yeah.
You know, the low-end, high-volume stuff is pretty well staked out by the big guys.
Right.
There's such economies of scale that it's really hard for a small startup to compete. And then at the high end, there's so much investment needed. You've got to age your wine a few years before it's ready for
actual bottling.
Bottling end or sale.
Yeah.
You've got to have access to the right vineyard contracts. You have to have access to a great technician winemaker that really you'd need to bring in as a partner. And my training's on the commercial side, not the technical side. So it just the more I thought about that, the...
It's a lot of investment.
Yes.
You need
a lot of risk.
Yeah.
Whereas coffee, on the other hand, you know, commercially, I guess I think it behaves very similarly, and we can talk about some of the reasons why.
Yeah.
But actually, it's a lot easier to get the basics of the technical side under your belt as far as, you know, sourcing the
right
green beans, the basic roast profiles, and sort of understanding, do you want to be roasting more full or more green third-rate style? And then being able to do the actual physical roasting takes a lot less training than, you know, the 4 years at UC Davis plus a master's degree if you're really going for it.
Oh, that's crazy town.
Yes. So, you know, that started the whole process for me of, like, what would this look like if it was going to be a business? Oh, look at this.
Oh, what? That is a nice surprise.
We were just talking about wine, so here we go with the coffee and beignet pairing from the looks of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, you were married with Jen at the time, and you were at this, I'm assuming, Crosspoint, like, work for myself and take a risk, or keep going, seeing how far I can go with this business. And really, because you were so far into your career, it's totally somewhat stable, and you know it's going to be come in.
Yep.
But then you have to enter, like, am I happy?
Yeah.
Is this what I want to do for the rest of my life?
Absolutely. And I love wine. I love the wine business. They're great people in this business. We live in Napa Valley.
Right.
It's sort of like the epicenter of the business here in the U.S.
Right.
And, you know, I was perfectly happy in the wine business. But as I started thinking more and more about running, sort of writing my own destiny, starting my own company, and talking that through with Jen and where we could take it, she was sort of coming out of starting, reinventing herself.
Right.
Coming out of her own, she had been an occupational therapist, had managed skilled nursing facilities.
Right, forget about that. And then she's like this amazing singer.
Singer and voice actor.
Yeah, yes. Voice actor. Like, I went to karaoke with her and Sakon for one of Sakon's karaoke nights. And I'm like, who is this lady? I thought you were someone else.
My rock star. My rock star wife.
Oh, yeah, you guys are. That's amazing.
So when our oldest was born, Lila's 8 now. When Lila was born, Jen, I think, knew as she went on maternity leave that she didn't want to go back to the skilled nursing, back to occupational therapy. And she had always worked with her voice. She had sung semi-professionally on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. She had always had that as a side passion, like theater. And had always had voice acting in the back of her mind.
Yeah.
And so after Lila was born, she started the training, and over the course of the past 8 years has built it up into a great
business.
Very strong business.
Yay.
She's probably working more than she would like to be in the ongoing aspect of it, but she's doing what she loves all day, every day.
So
and maybe a little too much of it sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were having those kind of conversations, too, of, like, so if I were to take a leap like that 8 years ago, that wasn't possible because I was the one with the stable income and she had to do the startup. Now, you know, the
tables have
flipped a little bit.
Yeah. So, that's great. Because what's the worst that could happen, right? In the end, you go back to work, things didn't go as you planned, but you tried it. That's what I always tell people. They come up with, I have this crazy idea. What do you think? Like, yeah, just do it. Whatever. Especially if it's in your, and like my situation where there's someone with a stable income, and you've learned to live on their income, then you can just like, okay, I'm going to try this and see where it goes. And so you made that leap of faith?
Made that leap of faith, and first it was coming up with the right business model or business plan. And for me, the way that Ohm hatched, it was I took a lot of my wine training and I sort of said, okay, coffee, just like wine, there's a flavor spectrum.
Right.
You know, as a marketer, you sort of think a lot about, if I'm launching a new wine, do I want to, if it's a Chardonnay, do I want the big oaky Rombauer style wine? Or do I want the lean, you know, appeal to the sommeliers and the geeks, the Chablis style Chardonnay? It's the same grape, but the spectrum is huge in terms of the way that you can actually make that product.
Amazing.
And it's the same thing with coffee. It's, you know, the same beans could be roasted dark in a Starbucks peat style, or they could be roasted light to the point of almost being kind of green and vegetal. The way some of these third wave roasters roast. What I was seeing in coffee is that you sort of have both ends of the spectrum pretty well staked out. You know, you've got the massive public companies that are in that dark roast camp. You've got, you know, actually a lot of money pouring into the light roast camp. Not many people are in the middle of the spectrum. And so to me, I got really interested in that because wine did a similar thing. It was heavily oaked back in the 80s and 90s. Then it went to the unoaked, you know, naked wines.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of those wines would have been a little bit better with just a little bit more oak influence on them. So I sort of looked at that with coffee and said, what if I take the roast profile, the roast just a little bit further? You know, an average green coffee bean is about 10 or 12% starches that can be converted into sugars.
Okay.
So you sort of get, as you go through the roast process, there's this concept of peak sweetness. So at some point, the bean is going to express the maximum amount of perceived sweetness in the coffee before eventually it'll start to degrade and, you know, the sugars will get cooked off by the roasting process.
A little darker.
Yes. So that was sort of the, from a flavor profile perspective, that was the real nugget for me with Ohm was to say, I want my coffee to be naturally sweet. I want it to actually taste something a lot closer to what it smells like.
Right.
You know, a lot of coffee smells great, but when you actually take a sip of it, it's kind of bitter, it's kind of burnt, you get these other things happening that take away from the pure hedonistic enjoyment of it.
I like it. I like this one, whichever roast. Yeah,
this is my full stack blend that we're tasting hot.
Yeah, it's really, and I think, not that I'm drinking it, but it tends to be, this is the epitome of like what I usually tend to drink and like to drink in other local. I don't go super dark unless I've been with them, like I've gone to them for a while. I'm like, oh yeah, I like it dark. But if it's the first time tasting it, if it tastes similar in this range, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a really good cup of coffee. That was worth it.
One of my first indications I was on the right path is that I was able to convince Jen, my wife, to actually try some of the coffees without milk, without anything in it, and actually appreciate it.
Yeah.
She still likes her milk, which is fine, but she was able to sort of take a sip without and have it taste kind of sweet and balanced and delicious.
And not have that back, like, sometimes you have that back taste, they're like, I definitely had coffee today. Yep.
Right. It's like kind of an acrid bitterness that lingers. Right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Where do you get your beans?
I source from all over the world. So that was one of my first things with the flavor profile, doing the right in the roaster, sort of taking the beans right to the right level where you can taste origin, you can taste where those beans came from, but you still also get some of that natural hedonistic sweetness.
Yeah.
The second piece for me was, as I was, again, thinking about wine, you know, think about you going to the grocery store to the wine aisle, and how many thousands of selections there are on the aisles.
Yes, even at Trader Joe's, and that's small.
And how overwhelming that is for your average consumer. I mean, yes, if you're an expert, you sort of know more or less what's going on, but you know, your average wine consumer is pretty overwhelmed walking into that wine aisle, pretty intimidated. They're looking for things like, you know, a 91-point score, you know, a price point or a cute label.
Logo,
a logo. it's pretty similar with coffee. You know, you have, within the coffee set, which tends to be a lot smaller, a lot of what's there is single origins. There's like Colombia this or Kenya that or single farms, especially as you get into the high end. These very precious, very serious little, you know, lots of coffee. And as I was coming at it, I was sort of saying, you know, I think my consumer's going to be overwhelmed by that.
Right.
Also because with coffee, a lot of those best lots, they kind of come in and they go out quickly. They only last for a few months of the year. So what I decided to do instead was create blends that are relatively consistent year-round.
Yeah.
So my consumers can sort of say, I'm more of a full-stack drinker. I like that kind of full-body, little bit of fruit, blueberry, blackberry kind of notes. And let me worry about the geeky side of it, of sourcing the right beans to go into it.
I like it.
Okay. And then, so, you know, I make a number of different blends, and depending on how, basically how full-bodied, that's going to determine where I'm going, what part of the world I'm going to source my green beans.
And do you... is there like a, I want to say forum, but like a coffee roaster bean central point that all you coffee people like go to and say, oh, where are the beans this year? Or what do they look like over there in Colombia or in Kenya or, you know?
Yeah, so the point of contact here in the U.S., there are, let's call it about a dozen importers.
Okay.
That bring in
the word, importers.
Importers, yes. They bring in the large... the vast majority of the high-end specialty beans.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of working with the top 1% or so of beans that come into the U.S.
Okay.
Much of the coffee that comes in is blended into things like Folgers or Starbucks or, you know, any number of other much larger roasters.
Yeah, that can afford to buy a gazillion pounds of
So the roasters will give, the importers, I should say, they'll send you samples of things that come in. So I'll say, okay, I know that this is the season when Kenya is starting to arrive. So, you know, I'll have a specific flavor profile in mind. This cold brew we're drinking is about 60% of a Kenya pea berry from the Nyeri province. And actually, I'm in the process now of sourcing a replacement for that. So I know that the Kenyas are going to be arriving over the course of the next month or two. So right now I'm talking to importers. I'm saying, what have you got coming that looks really promising? Here's the flavor profile I'm going for. They'll send me little samples of, you know, a few ounces that I can roast off and do what's called a cupping that I can try it.
Do you, that's so fascinating to me. You really should make a documentary. Is there a documentary about it?
Actually, yes. We just launched our website a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things I want to get more into with our opening email, I talked a little bit about what we just talked about, so the flavor profiles and the natural sweetness. But education, to me, is a really key, important part of telling your own story, but also helping people appreciate better coffee.
So there isn't any documentary, right, about coffee, really, really?
I'm sure there are a few that are out there as far as feature length, but
I should none
Netflix. Are at the top of mind for me.
I should Google it, because sometimes PBS surprises me and they have these things. I don't know why I've never looked it up before.
There's some good books out there. I just read one that was sort of like a... Easy Rider or Hunter Thompson version of this guy going to all the origins of coffee. So it followed the path of it from Ethiopia over to Yemen, which used to be a coffee region, and now the civil war is not so much. Followed it through to the New World.
Okay, a little squirrel right now. I have to admit, I'm such a dork. So we were out, we did a mud run this weekend, and then there were about five families, and afterwards we went to a barbecue, and then we started talking about a group of us were talking, and one of the guys is from Ethiopia.
Cool.
I'm a dork.
Birthplace of coffee.
Okay, this is where I'm a real dork. So we started talking about the podcast. He's like, what is it about? I'm like, meet me for coffee. What do you do? I'm like, I just meet people for coffee. We chit-chat. He goes, do you talk about different coffees? Well, it depends. It depends if I'm talking to, like, a coffee owner or a coffee shop owner or a roaster. And he goes, you know, Ethiopia is, like, the birthplace of coffee. I'm like, it is? I thought it was Colombia. And I swear, I thought I, like, chopped his head off. He's like, how can you not notice? I'm like, I'm sorry. I guess you're right. Anyways, that's my Ethiopia story. I didn't know that. I honestly, like, truly didn't know it. And my husband's like, yeah, Ethiopia, who are you? Why don't you tell me these things before I look like an idiot? I love my husband.
Well, it's the only way to learn, right?
I know. I'm like, anyway, so sorry, everyone. Now I know Ethiopia is a birthplace. And he was telling me that you can never get 100% Ethiopian beans, like, in a cup of coffee, because it's super expensive. Like, you can, but it's incredibly pricey, and that's why people just blend it in.
Yeah, and that goes back to that conversation about single origins. So the higher, you can go to Ritual, and you can buy a bag of Ethiopian Yirgacheffe as their main producing region. Actually, this hot coffee we're drinking, the full stack blend, is about 60% of an Ethiopian Yirgacheffe.
Okay.
I blend it because it's more. I can get a more consistent flavor year round by doing that. But ultimately, now that I've got a website launched and a subscription service launching, I will start doing single origins as well. You know, basically just take a little bit of that component and sell that by itself.
Right.
You see that with wine as well. I mean, Burgundy, if you drink red Burgundy, it's almost entirely Pinot Noir. But if you drink red Bordeaux, it's a blend of Cabernet and Merlot and a number of other varieties.
It's so delicious. I mean, both, everything.
Both.
All of it. No, but this is really yummy. And right now, I really like the hot over the cold. I don't know, maybe it's because I went from hot to cold. This is tasting a little different.
Different, and actually different blends that are in them as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of leaving a funny taste. So don't go from hot to cold, everyone.
Better to start cool and fresh.
Yeah. Do you... Okay, so you figured out what you're going to get your beans.
Figured out my roast profiles, figured out somewhat of my sourcing. Actually, had an important piece of help with that, which is my consultant, Arno Holschuh. He used to run production for Blue Bottle.
Okay.
So it all sort of came full circle. My first Blue Bottle cappuccino, and then the guy that actually used to make it all happen ended up...
No, I'm good.
He came on board as my consultant and introduced me to a number of the right importers and got me access to a number of the right lots of beans coming in that you know, a newbie to the industry might not otherwise know to even ask for, let alone be able to get access to.
Do you think there's, like, not a godfather, but, like, a certain, there's just a small group of consultants, like, that really know? I feel like it's being, like, for a couple of the other coffee shops in town, they're like, it's this person that we always go to, and they've been around forever, and and it sounds like they all just know each other.
It's a pretty small industry, actually, just like the Napa wine business. It's everybody knows everybody after a while. I'm very much a newbie in the coffee world, so they have an annual convention at SCAA, the Specialty Coffee Association of America, and other things during the year that group gets together.
That's amazing.
So there's a lot of information sharing that happens. But, you know, me, the outsider coming in, I also think, well, that's where my opportunity is. I think about it a little bit differently than the way that everyone else is thinking about it. Get the expertise in to help me not fall flat on my face, but take a fresh perspective on the business and see how we can disrupt things a little bit.
And always, like, so you got your beans, you got where you're going to be getting them, and how you're going to be roasting them for your profile.
Why the truck?
You're right, and brand name.
and a route to market with the truck and all of that.
I know. How do you come up with, because you guys like music.
That's part of it, yeah. So I was sort of thinking of, like, what's the benefit of coffee?
Right.
You know, this, like, the caffeine, obviously, is giving you a kick. So I'm thinking of, like, electrical terms, you know, kilowatt or what have you. And the ohm is, OHM refers to Ohm's law, which is the measure of electrical resistance. In the musical world, that ties in because I'm a guitar player, and all of my guitar amplifiers have different ohm ratings depending on the number of speakers and the configuration. And also the concept of resistance, the beans themselves have a resistance in the roaster. It takes that they're absorbing heat for a while before they're actually then, you know, expressing or amplifying out the...
Okay, I have goosebumps because one, probably the geek in me, and only because coffee nerdists and purists probably know all this. And they're like, oh, that's so interesting. That's amazing. A lot of thought.
Yeah, I think. It's also, you know, I came out of the wine world where everything's so serious. Like,
yeah.
The branding, there's very little that's, like, playful and tongue-in-cheek, other than you can get sort of below $10, the cheaper stuff tends to be a little bit more frivolous and playful.
Yeah.
And I wanted something with, if I was going to be starting my own company, that was, like, fun to think about and riff on, so to speak, or play with. And, you know, it's not super obvious. It's not a cheap caricature of music, but to have that theme that kind of ties into the benefit of coffee, which is like making you feel amplified, making you feel great about your day. It seemed like a nice tie-in to me, so I sort of ran with that concept. Ended up, all of my blends are named after guitar amplifiers.
That's so funny.
So when I say the full stack blend, that refers to a Marshall full stack, which was like the classic amplifier of 70s classic rock. You think of Hendrix or Zeppelin or Cream or Black Sabbath, any of those.
Oh, my goodness, that's so funny. I'm going to have to bring my husband on a Saturday morning to your truck at the farmer's market. He probably already made that connection, but... Oh, that's so interesting. So fun.
Yeah, so we got the full stack blend. That was our biggest, boldest. I also talk about it like my Napa Cabernet. It's kind of like fleshy and fruity and forward, blueberry, blackberry. What's in the cold brew is my Tweed blend, which in wine terms, that's more my Pinot Noir. It's more elegant. It's more nuanced.
Right.
Tweed refers to the Fender amplifiers that a lot of the blues got, you know, Eric Clapton when he does his straight blues albums, or, you know, some of the greats, Albert Collins or Stevie Ray Vaughan, were all playing lower powered Fender amplifiers.
We probably all should just have dinner. You and my husband can just
geek out about it.
he's actually this morning goes, are you gonna be all right if I come home late tonight? I'm all, sure. Why? He goes, banjo. Like, right now he's into banjo. But he's
playing it?
Yeah. Well, he's learning on his own. He took some banjo lessons from a serious banjo dude down in Richmond. So he took lessons. I think that was his Christmas gift. And then, but he goes down there and just fiddles around with them. And he has this dream of turning our family into his bluegrass band.
That's great.
He's like, Henry really wants to learn the violin so we can switch him to, like, the fiddle.
That's so cool. Family band.
And Pearl can learn how to, I don't know, I think she's... We're trying to learn the guitar right now.
Oh, great.
Stuff, yeah. But he plays the bass, he plays the guitar. Basically, he picks up any instrument, and he's like, Aurora, there's an accordion for $100. Can I go get it? You went and got it! And I'm like, oh my goodness.
He could be the one-man family band.
I know, I'm like, I can take pictures. I'll take pictures. So why the truck? Less expensive.
For sure, yes. And for me as a roaster, you know, it's a little bit different than a coffee cafe model. You know, for Armand and Morgan over at Southside or Rick over at Molinari, their cafe is about getting people through the door. They're not going to cover the bills just selling coffee alone. They've got to have food and other things happening as well to make that revenue model work.
Right, and they're really all about community as well.
Yep.
They love
the regulars and
their
people.
They love their people. That's what I love about them.
And they're good people.
And
on
they're
top
good.
Of that,
yeah.
It's great. For me, it's, you know, my business really starts making more and more sense as I'm putting more and more beans through the roaster and sort of getting the scale out there,
right.
Building a brand of coffee, which would be hard to do with a single cafe.
Right.
So I basically have three different legs to my business. The first is basically, first it all comes back to roasting beans.
Right.
I have the truck, which I run around Napa Valley, and I do events, so, you know, winery, wine club events, Auction Napa Valley, Bottle Rock we're going to be at in a couple of weeks here.
Are you hiring extra for that day?
I sure am. Still looking for a couple of baristas.
Oh, really? Do they have to know how to be baristas, or do you...
I need at least a little bit of training, yes. I mean,
with just front of door.
Because the truck is such a tight space,
yeah.
I need each person to be able to sort of be able to
handle
either the espresso machine or, you know, make the high-end drip coffee or foam milk or whatever.
Or even temporary. Would you do temporary baristas just for the Bottle Rock weekend?
Yes. So I'm actually scaling up right now with, I normally have 2 to 4, and I'm looking for like 6 to 8 to make it through that weekend.
Okay. I'll send you a couple names. I think that, I think they would be willing to do part-time, like just for that.
Okay. Great. Yeah. And like we're going into the season now as well with weddings and events all summer long. So the truck is great for that.
And you only have one truck?
One truck so far. And, you know, I just got it wrapped and tricked out, so it looks pretty cool. You can check it out on the Facebook page or website. I wanted to be able to pull into a high-end Napa winery and have it look like it belonged there.
Right.
You know, sort of needed a little bit nicer fit and finish than your typical taco truck, if you will.
Right. But I thought you had it wrapped. Is it a different wrap right now? I thought it was...
It started off, when we launched a year ago, it was just a plain white. When I bought it, it had a like tiki hut thatched beach kind of theme on it. It was like smoothies and hot dogs or something.
But then it was yellow.
Then it was plain white underneath. Okay. Turns out it was a post office truck underneath. You could see where it used to say, we deliver for you. I designed a wrap. Jenny Olson, who's a local designer here in town, did a great job on the logo and the wrap for the truck. And so now it's got that on the outside. And you open up the window, it's got sort of nice wood paneling on the inside and cubbies and
high-end coffee equipment.
Yeah, it's super cool. So that's a great brand-building thing for me.
Yeah.
And actually, it's what I want that to do is definitely break even, but it's not sort of the main revenue component for me. For me, it's more about building the brand, and it's about selling beans and subscriptions to beans, which goes into leg two, which is my online digital sales and ultimately subscription sales.
Right. Man, Derek, you're getting busy, and it's only on leg two.
I know. And then, well, leg three, we're sitting at Jack's Diner here. Leg three is wholesale.
So you can find your coffee here at Jack's anywhere else in town?
Here in town, we sell it at Villargis Market and Browns Valley Market.
Good spot.
We've been blessed with some great customers and locals that have been so supportive. We're outselling at both of those places. We're outselling the big brands because locals
it's delicious. Hello, people.
Oh, thank you. We put a lot of thought and effort into the quality, but it helps to have supportive customers that are just in there buying the beans regularly. And, you know, through that, we've been expanding our number of facings. Yeah. We've been getting more promotions and great support from Villargis and Browns Valley Market.
So next steps, that's what you're doing. You're just, because everyone, they just celebrated yesterday, May 3rd, their 1 year anniversary.
1 year anniversary. Just launched the website, what was that, about 2 weeks ago.
Cool.
So you can order your beans online now at omcoffee.com. But basically in time for Bottle Rock on Memorial Day weekend, we'll have the subscriptions component in place as well. So you can go to the site and say, okay, I want to get a bag of beans every other week, once a month, whatever the interval is, just delivered to my door. I don't want to think about it. I want fresh roasted beans to be there so that I've always got fresh roasted beans in my pantry. Or you can gift a subscription as well. So you think about holidays, like I want to give a 3-shipment subscription to someone.
Hey, everyone, I would like a gift from Ohm, please. Just kidding. For anyone who cares about me and wonder what I would like. I know. Maybe that could be. I should just keep saying on my podcast. From all my favorite roasters. Well,
that's right. Just gift your wish list out on your podcast.
Gift it to me.
So that's a growth area. And then there's a lot of room with wholesale as well. I have a lot of people ask me, when are you going to open a brick and mortar cafe? But to me, it's like I want to be really careful about competing with my customers.
Right. And I feel like if you can handle the truck or maybe getting a second truck if you expand so much, I feel like your brand right now and in the future is it's unique. Like, why have a brick and mortar, really, right? If you, and it's not, I know you're competing with the other ones that have brick and mortar, but if they want that feel, support our other local people, not, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's kind of... And for I like how you guys are.
I'd rather partner with, you know, the sommelier world. I know a lot of those guys from my wine days, and, you know, there's so many fine food restaurant hotels here in the Valley. I'd rather have home coffee everywhere in those than one cafe that everybody sees as a competitor and doesn't necessarily want to bring the coffee in.
Right, and it's such a day draw, too, when you do events.
Yes.
At the wineries or Bottle Rock or whatever in town, it's kind of like you can pick up and go.
That's right.
And they can hang out. Maybe you can have a couple of benches out front.
Sure.
Right? For people who want to community.
Something folded onto the side of the truck, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah,
I like that
something.
Idea.
Something. Or at least at the farmer's market. I think if you had like a little bench, since your guys are there for the full hours, a bench next to it somehow, and... For us just to,
It's pretty sunny here in Napa.
Just to have coffee and sit down for a minute before moving on. That would be great. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, good
I feel like I've learned so much. I love it. Love it.
It's but such a simple beverage, but there's so much to it.
Who knew? Until I was a Starbucks fan for a long time, and... I think this is the first time that I actually said their name, but for a long time. And then
thank you, Starbucks, for that.
Right? Thank you, Starbucks. Because there came to a point that I just was all of a sudden, why am I pouring my money into this big corporate who, at the bottom of it all, I don't align with all their mission and vision and what they align themselves with, which is totally fine if everyone does. But for me as an individual, like, I have great people in town. Just support them in a way. So that's where my money goes to.
That's great.
Instead of $3 towards the big guys, it's $3 towards the little guys. And,
and it's a strong community here.
Right.
It's a lot of good people, and you want to see more businesses succeed. It's been one of the, since I moved out here in 01, it's been really cool to see what's happened here in Napa, to see it just sort of flourish and grow and become this. It's not quite Portland or Berkeley necessarily, but there's this whole vibe happening here that just, I didn't see much of that here 15 years ago.
It's definitely
it's really
different.
Growing up.
Even in the 7 years that I've moved here, it's definitely a lot more community than it was 7 years ago, you know? And I don't know if it's because I'm being more involved with things and trying to support more local, but... Yeah, I definitely like it, and it's definitely different from San Diego, and I am a diehard San Diego person.
It's a beautiful town. Good waves there, too.
Yes, yes. Great weather. It's like this weather all year round. That's what I miss about it.
Not so bad.
Not so bad. But yeah, so, but in all honesty, you did make a documentary or making one about coffee?
Well, I think what I'm going to start with is the short form video of training, you know, so different styles of coffee and what's a medium body blend versus a full body blend? What are the proper training on, like, the right ways to make a French press or a pour over? You know, one of the things that struck me as I was getting into the business is there's so much coffee out there. There's such a large percentage of the population that drinks coffee, but there's so much of it that with just a little bit better preparation, could be so much better. There's a lot of bad coffee out there.
Do you think that even, say, when I buy bulk coffee from Costco, which lasts me for a long time because I end up buying coffee instead of making my own coffee, but just even preparing that would be different. Can you know what I mean? Like French press versus, I don't know.
Yeah.
I need to learn.
Well, there are some, like, sort of basic assumptions that are built into the coffee market that actually don't work. So, like, the Costco idea, buying 5 pounds of beans. What I was taught as I was learning about coffee was that, one, you want to buy fresh. So you want to be consuming beans that are, let's say, 2 weeks old or less from roasting date. So, you know, you have there's an aging that happens with green beans. They can last 6 months to a year, sometimes longer. Once you roast coffee, you really want to be, it'll start to improve for a few days. It'll peak at around 2 weeks, and then it'll start tailing off.
Okay.
And depending on what sort of packaging it's in, if it's got a one-way valve on the bag, it can bleed off the excess carbon dioxide that forms, and oftentimes those beans will be gassed.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment those bags are open, the beans come in contact with air, they start oxidizing, they very quickly revert to their whatever their true age is. So one easy trick to drink better coffee is to buy small quantities of beans more frequently with a roast date on it. So for me, it's, you know, I'm trying to sell my beans within a week or so of roasting, 1 to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I gas my beans. They're good for 4 to 6 weeks, I'm like. But after that, I start swapping those beans out if there's still a bag or two. Oftentimes there's not, but if there is a bag or two still on the shelf at the grocery store, I'll replace those with fresh ones.
Because and what I know do you my, do with those older ones?
I can blend it away. I can, you know, sort of mix it with fresh beans for service on the truck, and then it's going to taste, you know, really good because it's mostly fresh beans with a little bit of the color, and it's still great. But so, you know, that idea of the 5-pound bag, if you actually move to like an 8-ounce or 12-ounce bag at a time every couple weeks or however long it takes you to go through that, you'll actually up the flavor, the quality of what you do.
Okay, here's the big question. Refrigerate or not refrigerate after opening a bag?
So assuming that first part, that you're just buying fresh every week or two, don't refrigerate. Just keep it. Ideally, the bag has a one-way valve on it.
Right.
So squeeze all the air out, get it as tight as you can, and just store it in a cool cupboard somewhere at room temperature, you know, hopefully not over a light where it gets warm.
Uh-huh.
The refrigerator has a lot of moisture. And roasted beans don't love the moisture. Then the other thing is, if you're going to buy the larger quantity, or you know you're sitting on a little bit of extra, somebody gave you some gifts of bags of beans or something, you know you're not going to go through them in a very short amount of time. I would go freezer as early as you can, and then just pull out enough to grind as you're going through it.
Okay.
If it's going to be more than 2 to 4 weeks before you can finish that bag, just throw it all in the freezer up front, and then keep out what you're going to drink in that first couple of weeks.
Oh, man.
But preserve as much freshness as you can by freezing it. It won't be as good as fresh beans, but it'll be better than, you know, 2-month, 3-month-old stale beans.
I'm going to have to hang out with you more. I feel like I got my science brain satisfied. My degree was in bio, so it's totally a jump from science to photography. They're like, what?
There's a lot of numbers. There's a lot of light.
That's what I
physics
said. There's a lot of, like, there is a lot of science, quote unquote, into photography, too, if you want to be on the geeky side of it, but... people are funny.
And the last preparation trick to just be aware of is, you know, that home coffee machine, that's sort of the staple of most kitchens in the U.S. Oftentimes, those machines don't get water hot enough to brew properly. Ideally, you want to be brewing between 195 and 205 degrees. Most of them aren't getting there or staying there consistently.
Right.
They're sort of in the, you know, 180 to 190 range.
Straight out of the box, they don't. Or do you think over time
they
start?
There are ones that are better than others, but you know, your basic kind of cheap coffee maker is not doing a great job of consistent water temperature and even application of that water to the beans.
So do you think that instead of having a coffee maker, because I have a coffee maker that grinds and then pours and brews for me, but do you think it'll be better? And I prefer it more because French pressing... Because then you can get the water really hot, right?
Yep.
And then you let it in, let it seep for a while, and then press.
French press is, we actually do that on the truck. That's how we do our, quote, drip coffee.
Yeah.
We have these big 1.5-liter French presses that are insulated stainless steel, so they keep the coffee warm. But we do that because it's a small portion that we're making at a time, so we can serve it really fresh after brewing.
Right.
And, you know, we can do I think we have 6 on the truck, so if we get busy, we can have all 6 going and we can be pouring out.
What do you do with all your grinds?
Try to compost as much as possible.
So you just throw it in your compost?
Yeah. Compost bin or, you know, around our plants, like azaleas, the certain plants like more acidic soil.
Yeah.
You know, especially with cold brew, you're using 5 pounds of grounds to make a batch of cold brew, right? Or that's the scale we're brewing at right now. So you see those out spread all over our yard in the back.
Will you have a lesson on cold brew, or did you do that lesson already?
I haven't yet.
That would be it. Because I tried, I don't think I do it well. I read how to do it, and I think I'm doing it right, but then it's really good for the first couple cups, you know, after it's all prepped. But then it's kind of like, it's all right.
Fades.
Yeah, it fades, and I throw it away.
Do you make concentrate, or do you make it at sort of full strength, drinking strength, when you make it?
I think I concentrate, because you're supposed... Okay, this is what I think you're supposed to do. You grind it, right?
Mm-hmm.
About your whatever.
You're doing a coarse grind like a French press?
Oh, maybe that's an issue.
That's one trick.
Coarse or grind? Maybe I'm not. But I grind, and then... in a, probably like a 2-liter mason jar.
Okay.
So if it's like a cup of it, then they put water.
Okay.
Lukewarm water. Or does it matter? Cold water.
I just use room temperature, but filtered.
Filtered, yeah.
Yep.
Filtered water. And then I let it sit, right, for 2 days? A day.
Yeah, I do about 24 hours. I start tasting it at about 18 to 24 hours, somewhere in there.
Okay, and then you filter it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your concentrate.
Yes, though a cup for 2 liters...
It's too much.
It might actually not be enough grounds.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure, I can't do the math on the fly, but I use 5 pounds for it gets me about 3 gallons.
Okay.
Right around 3 gallons of concentrate.
Right.
And then that can be watered back to about 5 gallons.
Okay, maybe I'm not doing enough. Perhaps that's why. Because I kind of just guesstimate. I'm like, oh, yeah, that looks good.
what do you not like about it after a couple days?
Because then you brew it, right, and you have your concentrate. And I really just put probably a cup to a cup and a half of the concentrate, and then the rest ice and water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty yummy.
Is it like a 50-50 ratio of concentrate?
Okay. Yeah. And then, I don't know. I think maybe by the third day, I'm just like, it doesn't taste the same, or it's just not as delicious.
Loosened freshness, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I mean, it's in the refrigerator. I have it in a clean mason jar, and I close it. And maybe it's just my personality, and I forget. Like, oh, yeah, I still have coffee. I should drink it.
All right, well, so after this podcast, what I'll do is I'll take my ratios and convert them for more of, like, consumer-friendly.
Yeah.
You're not going to be making 5 gallons at a time, but
let me
just compare that to the ratios I use, and I'll let you know. I don't know if you can post that in your comments on the podcast, or
I can
post it on Facebook or something.
Or add it to your website. Learn how to make a cold brew, and we'll just direct it to your website.
Cross
promo, man. That's what we'll do.
That sounds great.
Anyway, so everyone, thanks so much, Derek.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Hanging out with me. Got to drink coffee. A lot of coffee, and I love it. Where can they find you? Well, obviously here at Jack's, if you're not.
Here at Jack's. On the web, our website is ohmcoffee.com. So you can buy the beans anytime, day or night, and soon to be subscriptions as well.
And do you tweet where you are, or Instagram where you are, or
Facebook?
We put
Facebook and Twitter for our truck locations.
We typically
run the truck Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Tuesday and Saturday is at the Napa Farmers Market, 8 to 12:30. Great farmers market here in town.
Love them.
Down by the movie theater. And then Thursday is we're kind of all over. We're down by the airport and DMV. Yeah. There's some office buildings up here.
I heard you're up at Browns Valley Elementary sometimes.
Yes, we've been there. We've been at Queen of the Valley as well.
Because you have little people there.
Yes, that's right. And a lot of parents needing a little morning kick.
One of the Napa moms like, did you know Owen's at Browns Valley? I'm like, oh, jealous. I make my husband go get some while.
That's great.
That's so funny.
They're actually doing their annual carnival. Is that a week from Friday on May 12th? So we'll have the truck there for all the parents.
Super fun. Okay, yay. So we will use you for one of our events as well.
That'd be great. Yeah. Facebook, we're Ohm Coffee Roasters, and Twitter, we're Ohm Coffee. And we're always, we post our locations.
And you guys are the only one. No other brand, Ohm.
I think there's an Ohm Coffee Shop in Thailand somewhere. As I was looking at the trademark, it was pretty wide open. And wine, there's hardly anything that's not trademarked with the thousands and thousands of brands that are out there. With coffee, it's not too much better, but Ohm was available, so I jumped on it.
I know, isn't that funny? What am I going to name? I had to Google my name, too. I'm like, Curly Heads. Is there another one? Because I had all sorts of different ones. But
I love it. It's a great
yay. Day. Thank you. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you learned a lot because I think this is like one of my most educational podcasts and enjoyed every moment of it.
And your eyes, you're still smiling. Your eyes aren't rolling back in your head.
No.
Not too much education.
It's a lot and I love it, but you know, like I said before, I have a science background too, so it fills my science needs. Thanks for listening. Go out and support your local coffee businesses. Go call a friend, meet them for coffee, and just enjoy your time together. Thanks, everyone. Bye.